Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Flex Cortex. Today, I'm joined by Cody Gonick. So for those of you that don't know Cody, he is the owner of The Vault here in Edmonton. So thank you so much for making the time to come on today. And I'm looking forward to this conversation with you.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me. I look forward to it as well.
So just for some backstory, I make all of my guests talk about it. Just some insight on you, some background. I know that just from you and I talking, you were in construction before. So what led you from construction to getting into personal training and then now opening up your own facility and everything like that?
Basically, I've been in construction since high school. My family owns a construction company. And so that's just something that was kind of bred into our family is when you were in your summers in high school and even after high school. That's just what we did. You know, it's a roofing company. So it was not the most glamorous job, especially on the summer days or when it's cold outside. Paid really well. There was lots of benefits and perks to it. But in the end of the day, it wasn't for me. And I even went and got my management degree to pursue the construction company in terms of, you know, project manager role or a head estimator. And so I finished my degree, started as project manager, and was more so in the office, you know, learning the ins and outs of the business in its entirety instead of just on the labor force of it. And it still was something that just was a 9-to-5 job and just didn't give me that drive to want to wake up in the morning and be like, hey, you know what? I'm excited to go to work. It was more of, okay, here we go again, you know, another day. And hey, for some people, especially in my family, they love it. For me, I just said, you know what? I want to do something on my own. And so I quit and I moved to Vancouver and I took BCPTI. That's where I got my certification from. Nice. And started at Steve Nash. It's now Fitness World, but Steve Nash is where I ended up starting out. And went there just off of savings, working through construction. Didn't have the biggest drive in terms of work ethic. So it was very slow in the beginning as a trainer when I was there, because I was just there more so to be in the community aspect of the gym, you know, have fun with everybody. But I wasn't driven in terms of like getting clients and driving revenue and stuff like that. Until savings dwindled. Vancouver's very expensive. Mm-hmm. And kind of was a wake-up call. I actually had to move back home because I just simply couldn't afford it. And I actually went back into construction for 3 months when I came back home because I had to make some more money. And then after those 3 months, even with how tight things were, I just couldn't do it anymore. And so right then and there, we were actually at a wedding. Greg Merritt at the time.
Love Greg.
Yeah. The district manager, I believe, for Good Life. And we were at a wedding. We were just talking about life and in general and what I wanted to do. And I was actually getting into fitness before in construction. I was overweight. I actually never worked out, never was in a gym any time in high school, anything like that. But I had just started getting into working out and things like that. And it was actually about to sign on with my first coach for bodybuilding. And Greg had knew I got a management degree, and I was like, you know what, I want to get into fitness. Saw him the next day at Good Life. They are having their career fair. Hired me on the spot for the assistant fitness manager at Good Life Brewery. And that's kind of where I started really in the fitness industry in Edmonton, was there. Good Life was a great company. They have lots of things that they do great. My main focus there was sales. For all of the trainers. It was really awesome. I set records for PT sales in Alberta and Canada, and went to Toronto for some of the awards that they had when Good Life had their top 500 and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that was really cool and really got me driving into how to understand, you know, talking with that client when they're sitting in front of you, because none of them were actually my clients. It was just setting them up with trainers. Like, you know, you've been in the corporate aspect of it. And about a year into it is when I really was like, you know what, there's more in fitness for me and what I want to do personally. There was a lot of things that I didn't agree with on how, you know, Good Life did things. And, you know, it's nothing about them as a company. It's just simply having a business mindset and kind of wanting to drive that more. I just decided, you know, I need to do this on my own. So I quit on the spot and the next day started Gonic Fitness. And then from there, you know, I haven't looked back, but that was the second kind of biggest change in my life. The first one was quitting, you know, construction.
Yeah.
The second one was quitting a corporate job and having, you know, somewhat of a steady income in.
Yeah.
And within 24 hours being like, okay, you are now the sole provider on what you need to do for your family. I was engaged at the time and it was all on me. And so it was a totally different feel, pressure on myself, but it created a fire that I still have to this day. And, you know, that's kind of where I've gone to in terms of keep moving forward.
Yeah, so of course.
I went to first gig was at Evolve. Evolve downtown, started out with zero clients, had to learn my groove, had to learn what worked for me to gain clients, how I got the word out that I was running a private training business. I had actually only one client come for me from Good Life. So it was really starting from scratch. And then COVID hit. So that definitely threw a wrench into a lot of things because things were moving really good, you know, out of all there for a solid year. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit. And from there, my wife was pregnant at the time. And so, I was sitting there being like, okay, what do I do? So I reached out to all my clients and I said, you know, are you guys interested in training out of, I was in a duplex at the time. So garage was very small. And I said, if I collect some equipment in the beginning, you know, are you guys open to training? I open the garage at 6 a.m. in the morning. You guys come in and we'll close it. And would you guys want to start training? And every single one of them was like, yes, more so for like the mental aspect. Like, you know, how COVID was very hard on lots of people mentally, especially if they were moving their body. And that's kind of when I started acquiring equipment, you know, building the garage simply for the gym. And it actually went really good in the beginning. And then the condo board filed a notion against me saying, you're not allowed to actually run a business out of your home. And I had 30 days to actually not us move out of the condo, but terminate that business or it would implement a fine. And within that 30 days, I found the first real little studio I had over on 156th, actually, 1,000 square foot, signed the lease that month. And once again, had to figure out how I was going to move her and start. I only had one squat rack, some plates, and slowly on Facebook Marketplace, just started acquiring stuff. I actually had a bunch of Life Fitness equipment I bought off a guy who had it around his island in Spruce Grove. He had probably 10 pieces, bought them all off of him. And that's really when I started growing Gonic Fitness is out of that facility before the vault. That's where really things started to pick up in terms of clients, revenue, and what led me to the vault.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know Greg fairly well too. Like when I first started at Clearview, I was hired by Kyle, but Greg was regional. So I would say that Greg is the one that, like, I think he kind of connects all of us if we're in the Edmonton space, to be honest.
100%.
So he's good stuff. And I could definitely thank him for the exposure. Then also he was the one that like talked me into going to Movati because like this is when I was between.
Yeah.
So I remember I swung by and then he was like, we need to have you here. So I honestly don't know where I would be if I didn't go to Movati first. So it's kind of interesting how he's all tied.
Everyone finds their ways, but he is tied to a lot of that because of, you know, going from Good Life to Movati. And it's just, he loves doing that and he loves working with people. Great guy. Yeah. And I still talk to him to this day.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great with the business side of things for sure. And like, I mean, he's also quite a very knowledgeable trainer too. Like he has a ton of courses underneath his belt. So I mean, he's been great to work with. So for you with like your background, I mean, with the construction side of things, especially having some management experience, would you say that that helped you with that sales experience in with training as well?
Sales? Honestly, no, because, you know, on the construction side, I was a straight laborer and it was okay. Just,
yeah.
Okay, here's, you know, you guys are on a new job today. it was capping and roofing and stuff like that. And so there was no regards in sales. And I was honestly terrible at it when I first started. You'd get thrown an objection and I just, you'd be like, okay, no problem. I wouldn't pursue it any further. But it's like anything, the more repetitions you get at it, the more times you're in front of somebody, you get to kind of learn how people react and how you react to different personalities and emotions and what they say to you and how to come around whatever they're coming to you for, especially in the fitness industry.
Yeah.
And how to make them feel comfortable in front of you. And that's, I kind of found was the biggest thing that I had to learn. Even, you know, being at Brewery, you know, there was probably 20 to 25 trainers when I was there. And I dealt with a lot of them personally. And that was another way I had to learn how to deal with people, is because you have, you know, lots of trainers that were working under us, and all from, you know, vets to new trainers. So you had to really understand how to maneuver your day with all these different types of personalities alongside of talking with people and how to create sales.
Yeah. It's interesting. When I first started at Good Life, I remember Greg asked Kyle at the time why he hired me, because it took me 28 consults to sell a client.
Hey, it's 28 is better than some it takes an even more, you know, but it's something that you have to get good at if you want to be a successful trainer. You can have the most knowledge in the world on the training side of it, but if you're not confident in that consults, whether you're a corporate or a private trainer, that's where you kind of separate yourself from being successful or not.
You don't want to be the world's best kept secret.
No, you don't, or it's not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, I know, it's interesting. So, and I mean, actually, it's interesting because Rob and I are going to be speaking about this next week, but it's all tied into fulfillment, right? Because a lot of people, I think, get caught in this position where they are comfortable and maybe not fulfilled, but they're comfortable with what they're making, with the life that they're living, right? And I guess why a lot of people end up taking the 9-to-5 route. Nothing inherently wrong with the 9-to-5 route either, but I think like people like the safety of having like a biweekly paycheck. They like having the safety of like, you're going to get a bonus, you know, you're going to get your paid vacation and everything. So it's interesting because even for me too, before I got into fitness, I was in electrical for a bit, and I had like the option to get my book, and I like quit day of when they offered me my book. And I remember the day very vividly because my parents were so upset that I just quit. They were like, how was work today? And I was like, I don't have a job anymore. And they're like, what? And I was like, yeah, I was offered my book today. And I just, it's not for me. Like when I envision my future in my life, I don't envision myself clocking in 50 hours a week working this. And like, would I have job security? Potentially, you know, would I have stable income? Potentially. But for me, it wasn't worth it. And that's like just from a fulfillment standpoint. So it's very similar to you in the sense that like you probably could have made good money staying with where you were at. But like, again, if you're dreading going to work, if you're dreading having to clock the hours in, and if you're not happy end of the day, like that's not what matters, right?
No. And one thing that really hit home for me is the book I read, Rich Dad Poor Dad. And the two different analogies from his two different dads in quote the book. One, his real dad was the very 9-to-5 driven, you know, you have to have an education, you have to go get a day job, collect a paycheck. And his other dad, who was, you know, the entrepreneur side of it, took the risks, you know, but in the end of it, he's the one who became a millionaire. And his dad actually, in a government role, was terminated instantly, left with no, you know, pension or anything like that. And that's what kind of woke him up, the author of the book, was simply the fact that he saw what his dad did and how much work he put into it, following that safe route, if you want to call it. And in the end, it almost backfired on him because, you know, and this was working for a government job, they terminated him. And it was due to, he's not old, but he was, I think, in his 60s in the book, if I remember correctly. And he was left with no job. And due to his age, he couldn't find another job. He had no retirement savings.
Yeah.
And in the end, he actually, you know, was left bankrupt. Whereas his friend's dad, who he calls his other dad, the rich dad, he followed the entrepreneurial route and was not collecting a paycheck, but simply over time got richer and richer. And he became one of the richest men in Hawaii. And that really kind of hit home for me when I read it, is sure, in construction, sure, even at Good Life, I was making good money. There was perks to it. But I never knew kind of what was coming next, or I never had that motivation to be like, you know what, you know, okay, maybe a different management role is coming next, but then what is that going to entail on both ends of it? Whereas when I left, you had so much different drive to look at in a way, because there's no ceiling. And that was the nice part about it. And what really got me fired up when, you know, I did pursue the entrepreneur route is this: the simple fact is you can make whatever you want out of it. It simply is just what you're going to put into it. And that's one thing I believe very, very firmly to this day, is you will get out of anything what you put into it. And that's, you know, kind of where I'm at now, at a crossroad in the vault, and what's the future for it is another aspect of trying to create a new element and just keep growing from there.
Yeah. We're going to quickly like segue into the, like, obviously the entrepreneur side of things, but I have a cool story that I always think about when I think about fulfillment. And it was when I was actually in Puerto Rico, and we were there, we were staying at hostels just to, like, you know, cheap travel when we were younger. And I remember this one thing, and it really sticks with me, and it ties into fulfillment, I think. So one of the guys there, he was working at the hostel, and he told me like this unique story about, like, he had a business degree and he was like working in, you know, the suitcase job, you know, working in the high rise buildings, you know, driving a nice car, but he sold everything.
Okay.
So, like, you know, he had a point where, like, he had all of these materialistic things, and he lived a life where, like, people perceived that he should be happy so and fulfilled. But then he actually sold everything. And what he was doing at the time when I, like, spoke to him is he was actually living out of a tent on a beach with a backpack full of stuff. So, like, it's just interesting how, like, again, you could envision, like, somebody's idea of fulfillment and somebody's idea of happiness is so subjective. It's so, like, and it's like that guy could be completely fulfilled and content, and, like, for most people, they don't want to be living like that. But for him, like, he had all of these things, right? He had the nice car, he had the good job, he had everything, but, like, he still
wasn't happy.
Yeah, he wasn't happy. And it, like, it's always a cool story that I think about, because, like, if somebody looks at him, you would think this guy must be miserable, right? Look at this guy. He lives in a tent on a beach with, like, a week's worth of clothes, right? He lives out of a backpack, right? But, like, yeah, and then that's, like, his entire life. Someone takes his bag, that's it. That's all he's got. But I remember I talked to him, and he was the most, like, down-to-earth, humble, modest person I've ever talked to. And he had such a cool story. Like, when I talked to him, I was like, you're, like, a rad dude. Like, you just, like, you live out of a backpack with, like, you have a laptop. You just, yeah, it's so cool.
But that's what's cool about learning how people work, is everyone's definition of a simple life and a fulfilled life is different. You know, it doesn't matter who it is, whether it's Elon Musk or some guy you just meet on the street who you have no idea what his story is. You know, everyone has a different avenue and a different definition of that for their life.
Yeah. No, I think, and it ties in directly to sales too, right? It ties in directly to what we do with people as well. Because I think, you know, when I think about sales and what we do as trainers, we're really trying to sell an experience, and we're trying to sell an emotional component of it. And people often think about, they'll be happy once they reach a certain weight loss goal, or they'll be happy once they reach a certain target or metric. And oftentimes people won't be, because they'll reach the certain goal or specific goal, and then they'll feel lost. They'll feel like they're floating. They'll feel like they don't have a purpose anymore. So it's always interesting to talk to clients, even for myself now too, right? Talking about, like, what is truly happiness to you? What's important to you, right? Because I think end of the day, it's like they tend to almost focus on these outcomes, or they focus on where they want to be, but then they get these things, and then all of a sudden they're just like, wow, I have no direction now. I don't have a purpose, and I'm not as happy or fulfilled as I thought I would be, but I'm at my goal, right? Air quote. We'll air quote that. It's like, it's interesting.
You nailed it, because every client's going to come in and say, I want a weight loss goal. I want a strength goal. I want a bench 225. But in the end of it, in the start of it, you know, you can have that as a goal, but it's funny, as you work with clients over time, that ends up actually not even being the end goal. And it's simply just on what they want to do and why they want to do it and how it makes them feel. And if you can drive that home as a trainer in the sales aspect of it, your clients will stay with you for a long time, as you know, because it has that emotional connection that is more of a feel good aspect. We still get the results and they still see that and feel that. But there's way more to it than just a specific, measurable, tangible goal. It's, okay, why are they here and they continue to coming? And it simply comes down to an emotional response on how they feel when they train with you.
Yeah, no, for sure. I actually, a quick little side tangent. When I was watching this podcast a while back, and it was the name of the podcast was like Diary of a CEO. It's a good podcast. And this author named Robert Greene was on there, and he wrote the book, The 48 Laws of Power. Mm-hmm. And he talked about this unique story. And I always think about this, and it ties into fitness for sure, for me anyways, is he was an author, and he was talking about how, like, after he wrote his one, like, famous book, like the book that kind of took off for him was 48 Laws of Power, he actually had a stroke. And within that stroke, he lost half of the function of his body. So he actually lost half the function of the left side of his body. So it was an interesting story because, like, he took these physical things for granted. You know, when he was like, you know, before that, he could go for a walk, he could walk his dog, he could, you know, just go walk somewhere because he wanted to. And I think for me, it really resonated because, like, you know, we may have this body now. You know, we might have this certain look, we've accomplished this certain level of, like, you know, a physique, or we've certain these strength related goals or whatever. But like something like that, not to that extent, hopefully for most people, could happen. And you could just your life could change just so suddenly like that. And that's why I think it's like it's so important to have a really, truly honest and like really truthful why to yourself of why you actually want to be into fitness and why you want to be in health. Because if you're just doing it solely for vanity reasons only, you might reach a point where you're faced with some sort of really intense adversity like this, and your life drastically changes. And if you are very just attached to your body and how you look, it'll be a huge eye-opening moment because, you know, your life is going to be substantially different after something like that happens.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, especially, you know, I've done bodybuilding shows and in bodybuilding now, and where my mind is at when I was 22 in my first show versus now being 32, it's not even close to the same on yeah. what you're striving for. And it's just simply a matter of time and just a different life perspective.
Yeah. And I think that just comes with maturity too, right? The longer that you're doing this, the longer that you are working out, I think your values and your priorities shift and it changes quite a bit. And I think honestly, like as you're working out longer too, your why changes. I think when you first start, your why is often for most people that I talk to, they're very vanity related reasons. Like, you know, they're like, yep. I want to get big biceps because I want to impress chicks, or, you know, I want to fill out an extra large shirt because I want to get more dates or whatever it is. But then end of the day, it's like, you have to figure out why you're actually wanting to do this, because it's this very encompassing thing that consumes a lot of your time.
Yeah, you're definitely right. And as you get older, things get a lot harder. So you got to change those things quicker.
Especially for you now, like you got, you know, you have the gym, you have your other stuff that you're working towards in the future as well. You have your family, you know, you have other obligations now too, where like bodybuilding and just training in general is probably going to be like a solitude for you and a place that can kind of allow you to like really focus on yourself and better yourself, but it might not be the same that it once was when you were 22, when you didn't have the same priorities.
It's definitely not. Back then, that was my priority. Now it's something that it's a goal, and it's one thing I just wanted to challenge myself on one more time. And I do really look forward to this show in June at Nationals. But once that's done, I'm going to have a full switch on just a, not a lifestyle change, but just more of a longevity approach on working out. Yeah. I love working out and always will. Especially like I do have severe body dysmorphia, but I need to be able to understand the aspect that there's way more, you know, in fitness and in life than just how you look with a shirt off. And that's going to be my main focus when I'm done this show, is just prioritizing the things that matter while still enjoying the workouts.
Yeah, I think body dysmorphia is something that I would probably argue that every bodybuilder battles with.
100%.
And I would say that that's likely what fuels their, not their drive, not their like addiction, but I would say like their addiction and their drive towards training so much is this deep rooted body dysmorphia issue that's usually tied to some sort of childhood trauma.
And it's bad because it can mentally get into you in so many different ways, you know, whether you're on prep, you think you're not, you know, lean enough. And then you look at yourself when you're growing, and it's just a constant back and forth yo-yo on how you see and perceive yourself. Yeah. But in the end, it's our decision to do it. And so, you know, you can't expect people to feel sorry for you or anything like that. It's our choice when we do it. But as long as you're mentally stable when you're trying to do a show, no matter if, you know, male or female, that's the biggest thing when it comes down to. And that's what makes it very hard for people, especially post show, on how to do that and move past it and accept the fact that, you know, you can't look like you were on stage on a daily occurrence.
So I know that the conversation is around entrepreneurship today, but how have you been able to navigate your body dysmorphia issues? If you're comfortable speaking on it, because I feel like it's a very, very common struggle for, like, I would say most people, like myself included, right? I've been working out for, man, almost 13 years, and I still sometimes see that 15-year-old that was started working out. So you yourself, you know, going through different shows, going through having a kid, going through everything, how have you been able to improve the relationship with yourself and in turn improve your body dysmorphia?
I still am. And that's the hardest part is, you know, I, as much as, you know, we are trainers and we're there for our clients, everyone battles that. And whether the person shows it or not, it's something I still battle with, you know, to this day. But that's going to be my biggest goal going to the post show is how to just enjoy the little things in life without being so focused on what I look like at any given point. How I've dealt with it, obviously you do need a support system. You know, my wife, close friends around me, all of you guys here at the gym.
Yeah.
Everyone kind of has an understanding of, you know, where they can help and where their input is needed. But the biggest thing is, like, I mean, someone who struggles with it, if you don't go and ask for that support or just even a conversation with someone, you may not know that. Like, lots of people, if they look at me, maybe they don't know I have body dysmorphia, but I battle with it quite substantially. But if I don't have that expression with someone and make that aware, then it doesn't help you. So I would say, myself included, anybody who struggles with that, you have to seek help in a way that's healthy and that you can communicate with somebody and they can actually understand it. So maybe talking with someone who's gone through that is a better understanding of what can make you a bit more aware of it versus if you talk to someone who has never battled with body dysmorphia or doesn't have it, it's very hard to relate and understand what it is, you know, especially, you know, if you look a certain way. So I think in the end, that's kind of the biggest, I guess, tip I would give anybody who does battle with it is, you know, you have your close inner support group, but just make sure you have someone to talk to if you're just having one of those days, and just bounce ideas off one another on how you can help each other. Because at the end of the day, it's in your control. It is very hard to control it to an aspect. You know, I can say until I'm blue in the face that it doesn't affect me, but it definitely does. And that's one thing that my goal, especially having a daughter, is I don't want her to be able to perceive life or fitness as the end all. You know, there's so much more to it than just how somebody looks. And that's something I don't want her to see if, you know, she sees dad saying, oh, I feel, you know, fat today, or I don't want to take my shirt off, or I'm not eating ice cream. You know, I don't want that instilled in her head that, oh, okay, maybe that's, you know, ice cream isn't good for me, or I have to go to the gym. Like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'll never put that on my daughter. And I wish that on any parent who might have that as a kid. And that's one thing that I will make sure that never enters her brain is the aspect of, you know, it's all about how you look. And I might have that because I was always heavy when I was younger.
Yeah.
And, you know, but just because I was heavy when I was younger doesn't mean, you know, if my daughter goes that route, I'm going to be an upset parent. You know, it's going to love her no matter what. Obviously, you want to make sure they have healthy decisions and options, but I'm not going to be like, oh, you know what? You have to eat broccoli and rice and you got to go to the gym and do your cardio. You know, that's just, just how it is for me.
Yeah, no, you made a post a while back about body dysmorphia. I think it was like right after your show. So I think that was like a good post. And like, you know, I respect the fact that you put that out because a lot of people don't talk about it. And I think it's this thing that people are almost afraid to speak about because it's seen as like vulnerability or weakness. But I think, again, it's just like a normal thing that a lot of us tend to navigate through. And like myself included, like I was a heavier kid. So I think that's where a lot of my body dysmorphia tends to kind of funnel from as well, too, is like, you know, when you are a heavier set kid, you are treated differently, you know, how people speak to you, even, you know, how your parents talk to you, right? It's one of those things that you have to just kind of deal with as you get older.
It all stems from your childhood and kind of where it took you and how you perceive it, because you're exactly right. All of those play a factor.
Yeah. No, I think it's a great point that you made, too, though, about, you know, with your daughter, that you don't want to have her see fitness as like this extremist thing where you can't eat ice cream, you know, you can't skip the odd workout, or, you know, you have to only be eating a certain kind of food, right? So I think fitness is very much this very like overly embracing thing of everything, right? And I think fitness is one of those things where, you know, you're focusing on the mental component, you're focusing on nutrition, you're focusing on training, and the body just changes as a byproduct, right? I don't think, like, usually for most people, like, that should be the primary focus, but I think for most people it is. But I think it really just is this encompassing thing where it should just be something that improves your life tenfold, just everything.
Yeah, improves, not consumes. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, for sure. So for we'll jump to entrepreneur stuff again. So for someone who's maybe just getting into the space, like maybe let's say like they were like you, where they got to a point where they kind of worked up the corporate ladder a little bit, and they're at a place where they're, you know, they learned a lot, but they want to kind of like segue off and do their own thing. What would be some advice that you would give them for wanting to take the entrepreneur route, maybe rent out from a space or open their own space?
Commit to it and don't look back. You have to be all in. That's the biggest thing, is if you're kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out, it makes it very hard to get through those days and months that are tough.
Yeah.
And I dealt with that, especially in the beginning, is you just have to make sure every day you're making yourself better and trying to move forward. There's going to get speed bumps thrown at you, obstacles. You got to overcome them. You learn from them, you know, learn what not to do again. But the biggest thing is you just got to keep going forward. Like I talked to tons of trainers who, you know, whether they want to come here or just want to have a conversation, and it always comes down to the fear of the unknown, and they always seem to kind of be like, you know what, like I want to do this, but yeah. It's like, even you know, like we talked for a long time, you were a very successful trainer in the corporate aspect, very knowledgeable in it, but if you don't know what's on the other side, it's very difficult to be like, yeah, you know what, okay, let's do it. But my argument for that is, if you can fully commit to that and that is your main priority and focus, and you have an end goal and working towards that goal, that's what's going to get you there.
Yeah.
Being like, okay, you know what? You don't have that, you know, second voice in your head playing, you know, do this, don't do this kind of thing. It's like, you know what? I'm all in. Let's see how this goes. And I'm going to put a fire in my ass and work towards that.
Yeah, no, I think the commitment is a huge component of that. And actually, I did a TND a couple of weeks back, and I was talking to one of the new trainers about belief. And I think that ties in really well with this too, because if you don't believe in yourself and in your skills, the commitment process is very challenging, because you're constantly battling with this inner critic and this self-doubt that you can't actually be successful and be making the career that you want to have.
And that's huge. Like, you know, how are you supposed to become a successful trainer if in your mind you're always like, I just don't think I'm good enough to get this consult I have, or ask for this price, you know, or you know what, my knowledge isn't quite there yet. I mean, we all start from a point where we have to continually learn. Everybody does. Doesn't matter if it's in the fitness industry or not. You are only going to grow in something when you are continually moving forward, and having that belief that you could do it is what's going to get you to the next level. If you're constantly in your head about, you know what, I don't know about this, or I don't have confidence in this, it is going to make it very difficult, because you're always second guessing yourself. And that's kind of, I always talk to trainers about it. Like, you could really know nothing in terms of training clients other than maybe how you train yourself. Mm-hmm. But if you have the confidence when you're sitting in front of someone and how you want to help that person, they will sign on right there versus someone who maybe knows way more, but is just very, I don't have the answer. I don't have that confidence, and we'll kind of just see how this consult goes. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I just had that talk with actually the business coach this morning. Ironically enough, we talked about how like a lot of these people online, especially like big coaches, right? And you see them and they're not that like, let's say, we'll air quote skilled, right? Or they're not that knowledgeable when it comes to maybe coaching or training, but they're charismatic and they're confident.
Oh, it goes a long way, you know, and I've known lots of trainers personally who are very charismatic and can talk to anybody, but not as knowledgeable on the training side. And they're some of the busiest trainers out there. You know, it just comes down to having that belief in yourself and running with it.
Yeah. So for someone who, like, let's say they want to like open their own facility, what were some of the obstacles that you faced like in the beginning? And then what were some of the things that you would advise people do to get their ducks in a row, let's say, so then that way they can make it happen?
Number one is the financial element of it. You know, you need, it doesn't even matter if it's a 1,000 square foot facility or, you know, on a larger scale, there is a big financial component to it, of acquiring pieces, getting documentation done, making it a corporation. There's so many elements that I just didn't understand when I was like, you know what, let's open the vault up. And I had to learn and adapt, honestly, very quickly. And it was very tough in the beginning. But I would say step one is just creating a business plan and a financial plan. And if you don't know how to do that, you got to have someone make that for you, so you actually can understand where your targets are and what is to be expected over the next 1, 3 to 5 years. Because you have to be able to plan for that. And so in the beginning, you want to make sure outside of the financial part that you have a plan, you know, especially if you want to open a gym. As we all know how competitive the fitness industry is, you know, doesn't matter if it's Pilates, yoga, spin, you know, weight training and public gyms, private gyms, it's very competitive. And if it wasn't, then, you know, it wouldn't be a big industry. So obviously competitiveness is good, but you got to be able to create a competitive advantage.
Yep.
If you can create a competitive advantage for what your goal is, then you can succeed, you know. And when I started the vault, there was no gym that kind of had the business model that I wanted to go with a private one-on-one gym solely for trainers, no member kind of thing, on a very high-end equipment scale. Now, going that route, obviously the financial component is the high-end equipment scale. And, you know, that's something you have to understand the costs of it and really what it entails. You know, lots of people, whether you own a private or a public gym, think that it's a money-making machine. It is definitely not. It is way more work. There's so many days that I wish I was still back at the 1,000 square foot studio, but I wouldn't change anything for the world. I love our team here. I love our group. I love the direction we're going, but in the end of it, it is a lot more work than people anticipate, owning a gym. Mm-hmm. But if that is a goal of somebody's, I would recommend meeting someone who's owned a gym and actually get the breadth of what it's going to take starting one and making one, not just starting, anybody can start a gym, but be able to succeed in it. And you don't want to be within your first year, okay, I got to shut this down because it's just not going anywhere, especially if you've committed to a large equipment purchase or things like that. So it's understanding what you're getting into.
Yeah.
And not just being like, it's not as easy as just being like, okay, you know what? I'm going to be a private trainer and let's go. It is a huge step on a different direction as an entrepreneur, but anyone can, I'm not saying it's only made for certain people. You just have to have a different understanding of what it takes to run a business. That's like opening any business. If you don't understand the metrics of it, the target of it, the market of it, it's going to be hard to succeed in it. But if you can build somewhat, you know, get a good understanding of your business plan, your target model, and where you want to go with it and have metrics, then it can be more achievable than just being like, okay, you know what, I'm going to start a gym and let's go. That's where it's very hard to succeed, at least in my opinion, in the fitness industry.
So would you advise like kind of running, I mean, obviously everybody's take on something like this would be different depending on where they're at and everything, a lot of considerations within that, but would you recommend likely taking the route that you took where you kind of have smaller spaces, you gradually kind of accumulate pieces, and then you just get to having a bigger space? Or would you recommend just kind of going to kind of like the space you're at right now, where it's like a middle-sized space where you can actually just have like a decent amount of equipment at the beginning? Or would you suggest a different approach?
Are you asking more so if a trainer wants to start a little studio or work at, you know, a different type of studio, if someone's trying to open a smaller studio versus a larger gym?
Like I would say probably if somebody is wanting to open their own kind of studio, would you recommend them opening up something a little bit smaller? Because I know that you mentioned that you went to that small 1,000-square-foot place first and then...
100%. If you want to, if you really, truly want to open a gym, you got to start, especially if it's yourself. It's different if you have partners or investors. Like you said, that's a total different topic. But if you're one person, one revenue, one financial backing, start smaller and then scale up from there. Because if you start we all have a dream. But if you try to start that massive gym right out of the get-go and you don't understand just how to run the fundamentals of a day-to-day element, it's very hard. And I would say even before wanting to start a studio, you have to be such a successful trainer that you can really understand the ins and outs of the industry from a trainer perspective. Because if you don't, owning a gym, they do have, you know, a collaboration on how they work together. So you still, let's say you start as a trainer, but your end goal is opening a gym, give yourself 5 years as a trainer. And I truly mean that. And really understand the industry, how things work, how you work as running a business, and then scale up from there would be a studio. See how that goes. You know, don't have to go all out in the beginning. And then from there, you can really decide on what you want to do and how you want to scale. That would be my biggest advice. If you're looking to start off in a reasonable manner where a way you can scale up.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So even like taking the approach where you get your feet wet in the commercial space, you kind of make your mistakes there. You learn a lot of the business side of things when it comes to selling clients and everything, and even like learning how to be a better trainer, getting to the point where you're maybe renting from a private space somewhere or you're renting from a gym somewhere just to like build your clientele base up and get more experience. And then getting your own space where you can actually like accumulate some pieces, put stuff together and get some experience like running your own space before you actually go to the point of like, okay, now I want to scale and now open a space where it's maybe private like the vault now, or where it's public where you're wanting to actually have like employees and have it be open to the public kind of thing.
100%. Because I mean, you know, as well, look how many gyms or smaller studios go out of business. You know, it happens every year. The ones that you see stay in are, you know, obviously the corporate gyms, but other than that, the ones that stay in business are the ones that have a niche market. They offer something that is attractive to people and incentivizing to people. And it's not just your run of the mill studio or gym. Mm-hmm. Those ones tend to stay open longer. But like since COVID, lots of gyms, studios, you know, little places like that have gone out of business. It didn't mean they didn't have a good business model or understanding how to run their business. It could just come into factors that it wasn't a specific niche that was attractive to lots of people as we've moved past COVID and got into more of a, you know, lots of things are done online. You know, there's AI now. So you really have to be able to understand the different types of niches out there in the fitness industry.
Yeah. And I think another talking piece would just be that the community component of it. I think that, you know, just talking with you and knowing you as a person and as an owner too, I think you're really big on community and making sure that the team is happy. And I think that that's a big thing because I've obviously met a lot of people that have owned a lot of gyms. And I think that one thing that you really prioritize is the happiness of your trainers.
In my opinion, that's honestly the number one thing. You could have the nicest facility out there with the most amazing equipment, but if you have people on your team who, you know, create drama, argue, fight, there's always issues, don't get along, it's going to be very hard to make that a place people want to be. Whereas, you know, here, even at the vault, we're not a huge operation by any means, But I don't think there's one trainer here that you could ask and says, you know, do you not enjoy the environment at the vault? And I think every single trainer's answer here would be, that's a big reason why they are here and still here is because of the community and the vibe and how close we are, even with everyone running their own business. It's not like we're all running one company. Everyone here has their own business. And that to me, even on things that are coming up down the road, is always going to be my number one priority, is making sure that the community is our main focus and what drives what our end goal is.
Yeah, that was a big thing that drew me there for sure. Cause I know that, I'm trying to think when I first kind of met you, was it when Prescript did their upper body intensive?
Yeah, it was Prescript in December of 21, I think.
That's when I was still at Mobody.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, that's when you and I talked, because you talked to me when I was there.
That was the first year we were open. We opened in August that year, and then we had Jordan and their team come down. And yeah, that was the first time you and I talked in person.
Yeah, and then I remember that conversation that we had had was definitely a deciding factor. And I remember also just like I knew a lot of the team there, and everybody that I had talked to had said that they really liked the culture and the community environment. And they had mentioned that was a big thing that drove them to go to the vault initially, and like that has kept them around, was those things.
And even look on your element here, you know, you're definitely one of the leaders here. You like the environment so much, you know, you run these TNDs for the trainers, not because you have to, but because you want to, because, you know, you want to help build the community. And that's one thing that, you know, I respect highly in you and any trainer that wants to help with that, is the fact that you're not getting paid to do that. You're doing it because, you know what, you love the community, you love the team, and you're just simply there to help. And that's why I think we're such a tight-knit group, and we want to help one another, is because we all want to do that extra little step to help one another out.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate that. And that's one thing that, you know, when I brought it in, I was like, I don't see any other gyms that aren't commercial gyms doing this, right? They're not trying to promote in-house education to actually allow your trainers to build confidence and succeed. And that's like the biggest issue with trainers when they first start in the field, is they come in, they think they know everything, they realize that they know nothing, they freak out, and then they stop.
And that's why retention in trainers is it's a very staggered number, is because there's so many who start, and then it's figuring out the ones that can last. But I found this is to date the best group we've had. Always had and loved trainers who have come through, and you know, some have left, but the ones are here and year after year continue are the ones that do learn and do take that initiative to want to learn more and understand from other trainers, because none of us know it all. You know, we never will, you know, and that's the great thing about the fitness industry, is it's always evolving. And if you don't adapt with it, you're going to get left behind.
Yeah. Yeah. So to wrap this thing up, what are some things you kind of have in the works? I know like you and I have obviously talked about it. And then how can people stay up to date with you and what you do, and what's to come for the vault?
Well, without spilling the beans, I mean, it's in some ways it's been said on social media and stuff like that, but there is a big expansion in the works, without getting into details of it. But that is another thing that I just committed to and I'm working towards. It's a huge change for me and the gym itself. It's going to be very interesting, very fun, very exciting, and very nerve-wracking for not only myself, but it's going to be very cool for even the trainers who are involved now and what's to come. But as well as what we're going to be bringing to the community on where we're at, it's going to be something that, again, I like to think that I can niche out our area and what I'm trying to do with this new spot and what's upcoming forward. And it's going to be a lot more of a luxury aspect, but a place where it doesn't matter if you're a middle-aged mom, you know, if you're one who's very intense into fitness on any level, you're going to be one to be a part of and always want to be there day in and day out. And that's, again, the vibe and the community culture that I'll be creating. So I'm not going to say too much more on that.
Yeah, that's okay.
Other than it's a big change. But it's going to be very exciting, and I think a lot of people are really going to love what's to come from it.
Amazing. So if people want to follow you on social media, where can they do that?
Social media, biggest thing is going to be on Instagram. You know, mine is Gonic Fitness. Following the Vaults page is where we get, you know, ready for announcements and further things. That's going to be where definitely everything will be portrayed on. Now, the biggest thing on the Vault is showing what we have as trainers, you know, their stories, you know, what we can evolve. I'm doing a coaching series as well. On just different little things that I've learned over the years so it can help even trainers outside of the Vault. So both of those pages are where you'll be able to see and learn and follow through on what's coming forward. And obviously, as we get closer and closer to wanting to really get into detail of what's to come, it's going to be on both pages. So follow either of those and as well as all the trainers that we have at the Vault, and you'll definitely be up to date.
Awesome. Thanks, Cody. I definitely admire you and your work ethic, and I'm happy to be a part of the team. So,
hey, same to me, buddy. I appreciate everything you do here. And like always, I always like to see where you go with it, because you're definitely a lot further ahead than you were when you started. And that's all I want to see, is everybody keep evolving and changing. You've done that immensely. So look forward to seeing what's in your future as well.
I appreciate that.
You bet, buddy. Thank you.